people, you know, on like you mentioned, that consider themselves radical or far left, or even those that, you know, believe in certain ideologies. I don't have to agree with you. You don't have to agree with me, but I do understand that they're part of the equation for change.
Welcome to AZ Uncensored, a podcast brought to you by Arizona Citizens for the Arts, where we seek to build transparency between arts and politics. Stay tuned. Well, welcome to AZ Uncensored again. I'm your host, Madeline, and today I'm really excited to have Representative Cesar Chavez here today. He serves as a representative here, I believe district, remind me of the district, District 29, I believe.
Right. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so he serves here in District 29 of Arizona. I'm really excited to have you here. You're the first, we interview arts and politicians, so you're the first politician that we've had for this season. So really excited. And so, yeah, I understand that you serve as a member of Commerce, Local, and International Affairs Committees. You're the co-founder of the Arizona Legislative LGBTQ Plus Caucus. You're the chair of the Human and Civil Rights Task Force for the National Hispanic Caucus of State Legislators. One thing I was really interested in, I believe you're an immigrant, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, and so I was really interested in kind of your story is very inspiring to me, to be someone who grew up an immigrant, who got into politics, who started off in activism. I myself am an activist, so it's really awesome to see activists in politics, in political positions. So I just guess my first question is, like, why politics? Being an activist, like, you could have gone in so many directions, so why the electoral side? Like, what got you kind of in this path in life?
Definitely. Well, first, thank you, Madeline, for the invitation of being on here. As somebody who used to serve on the board for the Arizona Citizens for the Arts, it's definitely great to advocate for the arts here in the state of Arizona, a place in which arts is diversity. Arts is a huge population of individuals. Just yesterday, I was up in Sedona, and I love going up there, just seeing that diversity in play between sculptures and paintings and music and you name it. Why politics? When I was 18 years old, I started getting involved with a couple of groups, nonprofits, and even in high school, right before I graduated. And there was something that a former legislator once told me, and that has kind of stuck in my mind and engraved for many, many years now, even being a legislator for my third term, which is what I'm currently in. And that was, as long as we have more people that look and think like us, in this particular case, people of color, then the better policy that can be introduced, the better policy that can be passed and become law. So the reason why I got involved in activism back then was because of immigration. As somebody who came to this country when he was 3 years old, immigration has always been near and dear to the heart. And I want people to know that, you know, this country has afforded so much for my family. And we were able to have the opportunity of becoming residents when I was very young. We arrived in 1991, and by 1995, I was a United States resident and then became a citizen in 2000. But I also understand that not everybody has that same opportunity, and many people face greater obstacles than I did or than my family did. And that's why I can't sit on the sidelines and say, oh, you know what, my chapter as an immigrant has closed. I'm now a United States citizen. No, those individuals like myself who have faced challenges or hurdles along the way, we must be a voice for those individuals who are not in the same position as you are. And being an elected official has provided that voice, that representation, especially in my district where I represent the largest population of Latinos in the state of Arizona, a third of our population. So that's why I went down the route of politics, was because it provided me a louder voice for a whole community. It's not about me. It's about the individuals who either elect, who have either elected me or who reside within my constituency. But then again, at the end of the day, whenever I hit that yes or no button, it's not only affecting my district, it's affecting the entire state of Arizona. So it's about making concise decisions that are based off of providing a better opportunity to all Arizonans in this state.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that sentiment. I really appreciate that. You talked about like representation, and I think that's I kind of want to get into that. Just because, I don't know, this past election year has been historical. There's been so many with the Black Lives Matter movement, with the divisive nature of our past election, and obviously the pandemic. There's just lots going on, and I think there was a really intense push to get out the vote this past year, because, and the reason being, I personally believe, is because there's been a lot of, I guess, distrust really in just our democracy and our government, the way we run things, the way the system is set up. And so I see and obviously right now we have the very polarizing nature between the two political parties. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, last election season, identity politics kind of came up a lot. And I personally just kind of, I've been struggling with electoral politics lately, because it seems like both political parties kind of balance this fine line of representation, and then what I see is like tokenism. And so just with somebody of your background who is a person of color who has such a remarkable story, do you feel tokenized in any way by your party? Do you see that representation sliding to be less of representation and more transactional? Like, how do you address this, I guess, in your position?
Well, I think this last election was historical, not because of who was running for the presidency, but because of everything that was at stake.
Right.
And so when we talk about representation, it's not only about having individuals who look like us and think like us, but it's about people who have a vision for a future. Those that are going to push policies that sometimes other individuals might consider are either radical or too fast of a change for this country. Now, I might not agree with them, but we need to have a constant conversation on what the vision for this country is going to be 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 years down the line. And so I know that it's so important to getting individuals elected into office, but it's also about getting individuals who understand the fundamental value that this country represents. And so when you're talking about identity politics, I think that identity politics has to have a basis, and that basis is of being somebody who can interpret and act and fully represent all of those values into one. And that's in this country, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, being able to compile those into different issues that affect different people every single day. Today is International Women's Day, and I gave a floor speech on how we cannot celebrate all women if we're not accepting transgender women.
Right.
That is something that is very important, and it's important that we have this conversation, as uncomfortable as people might be. Once again, you don't have to agree with me. You don't have to align with my politics. You don't have to align with my beliefs and my sentiments. But we need to have a conversation, and that conversation needs to be surrounded what is political and what is just human decency, right? And so I think we forget that on a daily basis, especially when we get so raveled up in what is identity politics and the connection to party politics, which I think are two completely different things.
Right. And I do agree. I do agree that those are very different things in the way that they're acted out kind of in our democracy. But I kind of want to like push the grain a little bit more. So with you on a personal, one thing that we try to do on this podcast is really strip down the nuance between elected official and individual. So I really kind of just want to push you a little bit to, as an individual, as a person of color in America, how are you balancing being in a position that would not have been afforded to you not too long ago, you know? For example, like for me, like I'm a senior in college right now, and I've been navigating the academic sphere. And I mean, it's difficult to navigate like upper division academics, higher education in a space that was not built for you. So I guess like my question is, how do you activate change in these big spaces, in these, you know, at the AZ Capitol, where we're in a place that was not a building that really wasn't built for somebody like you to be speaking out about issues like immigration and trans rights and things like that, you know?
Well, you know, I think that when we talk about the stigmatization or the stereotype of what it is to be an elected official, what it is to be a college student, what it is to be an artist in this perspective, it's about forming your own and owning it. So, you know, I agree with you. The institution was not built for people like you and for people like me to be in the positions that we're in. Yet, I don't want to entice a future generation into thinking that there are obstacles because of that. I want us to start changing that conversation in overseeing the complete scenario and understanding that, yes, there are disparities. Yes, there's discrimination. Yes, there is inequities. But how do we push away from that into providing opportunities, into providing a mentorship of a person of color, as a journalist, as a person of color, as an elected official? You know, I've had to push back on many systems double what, you know, one person with one challenge might have, and that's as being an openly gay, formerly undocumented Latino. And so being myself in these positions, I've never closed the door because it was too difficult to bear the current situation. But I have always left that door open for dialogue, a dialogue that needs to occur when you want to progress into the future with a vision. So I can't close a door on somebody who says that men should not marry men, or that individuals who identify with a separate gender from their biological one cannot coexist, but instead asking, why do you believe that? And many times they can't provide you that answer. And that's your open door to provide that opportunity and educate them. Because if you educate them, if you provide them with facts, statistics, and testimony, you can at least say to yourself and to society that you tried to make a change, that you tried to provide equity for an individual who has felt unrepresented by a society. And that in itself is the most powerful tool that you can hold within yourself, and that's your voice. I've always believed that using our voice is just as important as taking action in creating a change, as long as that change provides good for all. We can't be one-sided, and we definitely can't continue to go into the past and drag that past into the future if we're not willing to have that conversation with people who might be on the other side as where we are.
I see where you're coming from. I agree that as a person of color in a political space, you do have to, I think you have to be ready to understand that there's going to be people like you said earlier who might not agree with your politics, who think differently than you, and you have to be ready to address that. But I think you also have to be ready to address people on the outside of, I think what I've been navigating is, it's one thing to address people who say, like, you don't belong here, like, you're Black, you don't belong here, you're trans, you don't belong here. But it's another thing to navigate people who say that, not because of, from a discriminating point of view, but from a point of view, like, you can't work in this space, like, this space doesn't work. Like, I've been having lots of conversations lately with, like, really radical abolitionist, like, Native American activists, and it's been hard to be somebody who was working on electoral campaigns to talk to people who felt the same way as me, who wanted to live in an equitable world, who wanted to fight for equality, but fight for it differently, and who were saying, like, you're wasting your time being in a space so ingrained by the system of government, the democracy is already broken. So I feel like for somebody in your position, for example, it's probably difficult to balance the fine line, because then you come across people who are like, you're a sellout for being a politician, and you're this, and people who you agree with, people who you agree should also be on the same playing field as everybody else. So I don't know, those are just some thoughts that I've been having lately about politics and being somebody who wants to fight for equality, but dealing with the dividing sides of people who say you shouldn't be there because they're bigotry, or people who say you shouldn't be there because they say the bigotry white supremacy is way too ingrained into the system to operate within it. So I don't know, I think it's really remarkable for somebody to be in your position to navigate that.
Thank you. And my statement shouldn't also be misrepresented with not having to push the envelope once in a while. I mean, that in itself is, you know, once an activist, you're always an activist at heart.
Right.
It's just the approach is a little bit different when you are an elected official, not because your heart has changed, but because of the observation of how this process works. And, you know, there are individuals in politics who belong to my same party, and we don't always see eye to eye, but I understand the necessity for their narrative to be told. People, you know, on, like you mentioned, that consider themselves radical or far left, or even those that, you know, believe in certain ideologies. I don't have to agree with you. You don't have to agree with me, but I do understand that they're part of the equation for change.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have those conversations, for example, I'll use Medicare for All, right? Medicare for All is a measure that has been pushed, not in the last 5-10 years, it's been pushed for many, many years, and where we understand the necessity to provide accessible healthcare to all, the question lies on how do we get there. And so that's where all people from different spectrums within the political timeline, we need to have that conversation to come to an agreement, or at least come to a consensus in which we can incrementally move towards that goal, knowing very well that it's not going to happen overnight, and knowing very well that it takes political will to be able to cast a vote or make a decision that is better going to represent those individuals that we are supposed to be representing on a daily basis over a $1 billion corporation. The $1 billion corporation has many people advocating for them, many of those that they pay for. But who's advocating for your everyday person? Who's advocating for that person who cast their vote for you because they put their trust that you would represent them to your fullest potential? And that, I think, is one thing that all politicians should remember on an everyday basis. So I agree with you. I do agree that we need to push that envelope. We need to hold a line that's true to yourself and your core values, but doing it in a strategic way and one where you're culturally competent to those individuals that you're supposed to be representing.
Thank you. I definitely agree. I like your statement that like that equation for change, it really is about how you get there, the strategy to get there. And it's trial and error. It's always going to be trial and error when it comes to advocating for change, which I'm sure you've realized. But I did want to kind of change the narrative of this conversation a little bit. I did read up that you were into mariachi music at one point in time. And being that we're discussing arts and politics, us at Arizona Citizens for the Arts really believe that, which I'm sure you know as a previous board member, but we really believe that the arts is very transformational for an individual. It's very transformational in education. And so I did want to kind of talk about just your love for music and how one goes from, I guess, from mariachi to legislator. Like, I really want to know about that journey, I guess.
Well, the arts is the heart to the soul. I truly believe that. When I was about 15 years old, I started singing professionally. Prior to that, it was just a matter of listening to the music. It caught my attention. Now, I grew up with my grandfather taking me to school and picking me up from school every single day. And all he played was mariachi music. He played Vicente Fernandez, Lola Beltran, Juan Gabriel, name it. Some of the most iconic voices of mariachi music. And being one that has always been somebody who asks a lot of questions, I was that kid. My questions were, why do you like this song? Why does it sound like this? Why does one have these instruments and the other does not? What is mariachi? Where does mariachi come from? Et cetera, et cetera. And my grandfather, being a lover of music, a lover for the folklore arts, he had all the answers. And so I started unraveling myself more so into that music. When I turned about 13 years old, that's when I would listen to it on a more frequent basis on my own, not just being in the car with grandpa. And I started deciphering the songs. Now, mariachi music, for those that have heard it or have paid attention to it and understand the language, know that there comes a very intimate sentiment to these songs, many of them being about despair and heartbreak and whatnot. A lot of them being many songs that are played at weddings and quinceañeras and birthday parties and whatnot. I've defined mariachi music as the essence that accompanies you when you are born and when you die. That's just the definition that I can see for mariachi music. When I turned 13 or so, I started imitating these artists because I wanted to kind of sing along with them. I didn't know how to sing. I didn't think I had a voice for it. But I wanted to kind of play around with my vocals and start imitating some of these singers. And finally, when I got to a point where I had trained my vocals, I was able to actually belt out a song on cue within the diagram of the composition and actually sing. And people within my family, because the only people that would hear me were my family members, they started telling me that I actually sang good, that I actually had heart, that I could actually perform these songs. And so I first started off at small gatherings. So first family, then a family member's friend that was at this party would hire me for their birthday or their quinceañera or their wedding. And finally, when I turned 16 years old, I was able to have my first gig in a larger audience. And this was actually in Los Angeles, where I based my career for about close to 10 years after that, and was fortunate enough to tour throughout the United States, tour throughout Mexico, went to Colombia, Puerto Rico, traveled with internationally renowned mariachis, with Grammy award-winning artists. And the reason why we have put a pause, and I will say a pause because I don't think you, those of us that love music, I don't think you hang your hat up or retire forever. But when I put a pause on it was during the recession, when everything just kind of took a turn and froze in time. And I came back to Phoenix, sang at a couple of nonprofit, you know, charity events and fundraising. But that's actually where I got more involved in activism and community organizing and met, you know, legislators and people that were involved in the movement for immigration. And one thing leading to another, because I am a huge believer that everything happens for a reason and that coincidences do not exist. Here we are in this position representing my community. But, you know, I would say that music and politics go hand in hand because it truly does represent an art. Politics has its art. Many times people can't understand that art, but the art of providing somebody a better life, the art of being able to negotiate a plan or a deal that helps a majority of individuals, all of that has its art in itself. So I think music has prepared me for this position, and it's definitely prepared me to be able to be open and transparent with the community that elects me.
That is absolutely beautiful. I think that's a really interesting kind of, to go from a mariachi singer to a politician. Absolutely remarkable. And I thought that was a beautiful definition that you gave to mariachi music. I myself am also a singer and a lover of music, so I definitely connect with your sentiments. And I'm glad you said a pause, because anybody who's involved with music, I definitely say it, don't stop ever. Don't ever stop. And I'm glad you said that there was a pause. Do you still, I know obviously not professionally, but is mariachi music still a very like instrumental, I guess, force, art form in your life currently? I mean, you're also balancing the art of politics. And like you said, there's art to strategy and negotiation, but I just, yeah. Do you still?
It's what keeps me sane. It's what keeps me going every single day.
Awesome.
Believe me, I wake up listening to music. I drive into work listening to music. I'm in my office working and I'm listening to music. It's just part of me every single day of my life. It's, you know, it's part of my existence and part of my breathing. I'm open to all kinds of music. Like I said, music is part of your soul. And music in itself is one that, you know, provides you a definition to what you're feeling. So yes. Whether it's, you know, listening to mariachi music or getting pumped up to a good AC/DC rock song, or, you know, just living mellow, listening to Aretha Franklin, Al Green, whatever it might be, music defines every single moment of our life. And so that's why the arts are so important. That's why we need to continue investing in the arts. We need to ensure that the arts can get into the hands of every single individual in this state and in this country and in this world. If we had more arts in our schools, in politics, in our everyday life, regardless of your background, I think that we would have less problems.
I totally agree. I think if everybody had an aspect, I think high school just would have been way easier. And I went to a school that didn't really advocate for the arts as much. Mm-hmm. It just navigating growing up in puberty and in new life experiences and all of that. I was lucky to have that as a kid and as a teen and now as a college student. And I'm sure you've been lucky to have that, but it's, I'm very grateful to hear you express the sentiment of investing in that, because arts is, it's very therapeutic.
Oh, yeah.
It's very definitive to each moment in time that we're living in. So, yeah. Well, I interrupted you.
No.
But I just want to thank you for being here today, for chatting with me about arts and politics, and for your investment in some in very important issues that we have. That's very, it's very it's enlightening and gives me a lot of hope to see, especially in a time right now, to see somebody advocate for the things that are very important. So,
well, thank you, Madeline. I really appreciate the invitation. It was a pleasure being on here. It was great meeting you, and especially knowing that I share the same sentiment with another individual out there in regards to the arts, in regards to music. And I join you in continuing for this, in continuing the investment or seeking the investment for arts and sharing it with the world.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. You take care now.
You as well.